Climate activists are rallying and marching at the state capitol in Albany, New York this hour. It's their State of the Climate report, and they're demanding action on the climate. Activists are marching over to the state concourse at 11:30 for the governor's State of the State address and budget release. Speakers include Oscar-nominated actor James Cromwell and Professor Sandra Steingraber. Cromwell has been nominated for an Oscar, 4 Emmys, and 4 Screen Actors Guild Awards during his career. Some of his more notable films include Babe. He was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. Star Trek First Contact, LA Confidential, The Green Mile. He's also been an advocate of progressive causes, particularly in animal rights. On December 18th of last year, he was arrested while protesting the construction of the CPV power station, which we will tell you about in just a moment, in Wayweyanda, New York, near his home in Warwick. Before the rally, Cromwell joins us this morning with Pramila Malik from Protect Orange County, who was also arrested along with Cromwell last month. And it's a great pleasure to welcome you both to the roundtable this morning. Thanks for fitting us in before the rally. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you both
Thank
with
you.
Us. Let me just go to the story from last month, late December. You get arrested. Is that important for that to happen to get the word out of what is happening not only in your corner of the state, but really a mindset that is spreading throughout the state and the country?
It's very important because it's very difficult in a community when a large corporation comes in. They take a lot of care in making sure that what they're doing is kept from the public. So when we would hand flyers around, people would say, I didn't know they were building a power plant over there. So even though you're there protesting and you're having meetings, I went to a meeting, there must have been 200 people there. And still, the community doesn't respond. You protest in front of the site and nothing happens until finally you do an event like this, where you do civil disobedience, suddenly you're in 300 papers, suddenly everybody knows about you, it gets exposure, and the issue that you're protesting against, which is not just the CPV plant, it is the 300 plants that are going to be built around the country, which have to be stopped if we're going to live on this planet, that becomes then an issue which everybody has to address.
So I just want everyone to be on the same page here so they understand what is going on. So CPV stands for Competitive Power Ventures. This is a Maryland-based company who is looking to build this plant. Talk to us of how this, and Pramila, I think you can address this, of how this then relates to the lines and the compressor in Minisink of that already exist.
Right. So right now we have in Minisink, we have the Millennium Pipeline, a 30-inch pipeline, which brings frack gas from Pennsylvania through New York State to Ramapo, New York. And we have 2 metering stations. And in 2013, a compressor station was built and became operational. Now, the company said it was merely to push gas along the line, but we were told by town officials very early on that it was being built for the power plant. We didn't quite understand the connection, but now we do. Because every power plant needs a compressor station. They need to have the gas cleaned out, and it needs to be processed and repressurized and redirected to the lateral pipeline to get to the power plant. So the problem with these power plants, they have a whole host of impacts, environmental and public health impacts in and of themselves, but they also carry with them a range of gas infrastructure facilities, which includes compressor stations. And there's increasing information about the toxicity of compressor stations. It includes metering stations. It includes thousands of miles of pipeline. So there's this massive gas infrastructure build-out underway to allow for the development of these 300 new gas-fired power plants planned around the country.
One of the things that is a conundrum in understanding all of this is, and I'll admit this even as someone who reports on it fairly regularly, is that in this state, the governor has said no to fracking. So, but that's essentially what is happening, right?
Yes, it's fracking in somebody else's backyard. We
so
said
we're,
no
we're
to fracking,
the results.
But we didn't say no to fracked gas. So yeah. The fracked gas still comes into New York and is being used. In fact, it's becoming sort of the centerpiece of New York energy policy.
So what is the benefit of that? I realize your stance is there is no benefit to it, but I mean, why is that even a thought? Is it cost?
Well, I have a theory, which is it's not so much the power plant, because we in Orange County do not need that power. That's going to go on the regional grid. But you need a justification for building pipelines to take your fracked gas to some place where you can liquefy it and send it to Europe and Asia, where you get six times as much. But it's very hard to sell pipelines. So what you do is you sell this idea of power plants, which is the development money in local communities, and a market for the gas, which because right now they don't have a market, so they need a market. So it's simply purely economics for the profit of the companies that are the extraction companies and the companies that build these power plants.
When you think about the actual, you're having a state of the climate rally in just a few minutes here in Albany. So ultimately, what are you looking for from the governor?
Well, we want an energy policy that's consistent with the science, both the science on fracking and the health health impacts associated with fracking, as well as the climate change impacts associated with fracking and the use of natural gas. You know, we're being sold this this deception that gas is a cleaner fuel and it's a bridge fuel to our sustainable future, but it's not cleaner, actually. It's worse than coal, especially when you consider fugitive methane, which is leaking from the full life cycle, from extraction all the way to the consumption, and methane is leaking throughout that process. And
okay, so that's fugitive methane.
Right.
And how do we track that? How do we know that that's even there?
Well, that's part of the problem, is that nobody is tracking it. Some studies have been done in the past where they've looked at certain segments of pipeline and they found the leaking to be between 4%, as low as 4%, and as high as 13 to 14%. But the bottom line is, with you cannot bring it down to 0%. It's the physics of gas.
It can be seen, you know.
Gas will always leak. Yeah. Every place there's a weld, every place there's a valve, you're going to have gas leaking. And it's leaking probably at a much greater rate than we know of, because nobody is actually monitoring it. But we live in Minisink and we can smell it. We smell it constantly. We smell leaking gas constantly. And that's part of the problem. But we know that there is fugitive methane. And if you take a very conservative 4 or 5% leakage rate, that means the global warming potential of this project is actually going to be four times its CO2 equivalent output. So its CO2 equivalent output is 2.1 million tons of greenhouse gases a year. When you add in fugitive methane at a conservative rate, that makes the global warming potential of this project four times that amount. And we just can't afford that. This is 2016. You know, we are standing on the precipice here, both in terms of public health and climate change. We need to transition to 100% renewable right now. Now, the governor has come up with a plan which is not as aggressive as it needs to be, 50% renewable by 2030. But if he's even serious about that, then why are we approving even one more megawatt of fossil fuel in New York State? We have well beyond that 50% fossil fuel quota already. We should be building nothing but 100% renewable energy plants at this time.
And you're ultimately calling for 100%, obviously.
Yes, we're calling for 100%.
How realistic is that, do you think, James?
I think it's very realistic from what I understand. The Sanford study shows that this is eminently possible. If the money that is invested into the petrochemical industry, if the subsidies were applied to renewables, we would have renewables now. They starve renewables. The incentives for renewables are minuscule compared to the incentives for gas and oil exploration.
We're talking to actor and activist James Cromwell, who joins us this morning. And we're also talking to Pramila Malik from Protect Orange County. Both are going to be participating in a State of the Climate rally taking place at the state capitol in just a few moments that will ultimately end up at the Capitol, where the governor will be giving his State of the State address. When it comes to this, your activism, James, you've been part of various campaigns for a long time. Is that just your background of how you became interested in lending your voice to various causes?
My father was blacklisted for no reason. It didn't really affect his career the way it did other people's, but it sort of set was a ground for me. He was a man of principle. And just by happenstance, I joined a theater in the South during the Civil Rights Movement, an integrated theater that played in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Tennessee, called the Free Southern Theater. And I was in Mississippi when Mickey Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman were killed. And we played to black audiences in Freedom Houses surrounded by Black Panthers protecting us from being firebombed. And so I sort of got the idea, and I believe in it, that the work that I do as a theater person is supposed to inform, it's supposed to mirror back what's happening in the world. And subsequently, in all the things that I've done, when I worked in the anti-war movement, when I was part of the Black Panthers, I supported them. And I raised a family, and then I got involved in animal issues because of Babe, to whom I owe my career. And so it just seemed a natural thing. There is not, for me, a disconnect between what I do as a theater person, as an artist in the theater, and how I think a citizen should respond to what's happening in the world and to this country.
There was a time, and it seems to be less so, but maybe you have a different thought on it, that type of activism would keep people away from hiring you, from perhaps not wanting you a part of a project because of the political beliefs that you held. Do you feel that that's the case today?
Well, I don't know that. I'm Sean's Penn's in a lot of trouble now again.
Should he be?
Well, I don't know enough about it. I mean, it seems rather strange, the whole thing. I don't know what his motive was. I know that in Haiti he was trying to do very important work, and he ran up against Clinton, basically, and the forces of imperialism and colonialism and money, and they gave him a pretty rough time. And it may actually have affected his career. But, you know, I'm a middle-class actor. If anybody pays any attention to me, I'm of a certain age. I really don't care. I'm certainly not going to stop my activism because I don't get to work on some television program that sells soap.
But you still enjoy the work.
Yeah, I love to work.
Yeah.
And I think it's important. And I've been very lucky that the work that I have done actually is respectable. And I think it's made a difference.
And it is safe to say that you mentioned being on 300 newspapers and news sites as a result of the arrest in December. Mm. It's safe to say that wouldn't happen if an Academy Award nominated actor was not arrested amongst the
But
people
that's
there.
What my friend Norman Lear says. That's what celebrity is for. It's to spend. If you keep it in your pocket, if you don't do anything with it, you just take advantage, it will burn a hole in you. So he always said, you know, make use of it. Do something with it. Put it to good use. I mean, it's a silly concept, celebrity, anyway, but it does work in this particular instance to draw people's attention to something so that Pramila's voice, which is extraordinary, gets a chance to be heard because I sort of tag along and I'm the guy.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you, Pramila, have been yelling and screaming about this for a really long time.
For 4 years. And it's a sad indictment of the media, that they don't, you know, that there are families struggling, there are families walking away from their homes in Minisink, and you have a $1 billion corporation that is using public resources for private profit while hardworking middle-class American families are having to walk away, and the media doesn't want to cover it until, you know, a celebrity gets arrested. It's a sad indictment of what our priorities are as a society, I think.
Is it difficult because, and I alluded to this earlier, but It is difficult to understand sometimes because there is so much going on that is interconnected, although it doesn't appear on the face to be interconnected. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's exactly how the industry gets away with it. They not only segment the review process and the permitting process, they segment the information so that people can't make those connections. So you think that fracking is just the extraction. It's not. It's the full life cycle of the gas. It's extraction, transportation, processing, and ultimately consumption. And we have a serious problem here. This is a moral issue. This is a civil rights issue. And this is a human rights issue. Our governor has acknowledged that there are potential adverse health impacts from fracking. So why on earth are we furthering our dependence on frack gas? Is it okay to say, yeah, our neighbors in Pennsylvania can get sick? And then not only that, but we know that all of those impacts, the health impacts, the environmental impacts, they travel with the gas along the pipelines. You know, the leaking methane, the chemical emissions, the radioactivity, the volatility, the risk of explosion, all of that travels with the gas. And with this power plant, we're going to have the truck traffic. We're going to have all the socioeconomic impacts that also come with frack gas development.
One of the things that surprised me, and I didn't know this, is that because we think of just gas being gas, but the shale gas is different. Your contention is, and the science that I've read on this, is that it is more radioactive and highly corrosive.
Right. So
it's a different makeup?
Well, it's because it's a different extraction process. You know, they use a range of chemicals in the extraction, and because of the Halliburton loophole, we don't even know what those chemicals are. So I don't think anyone can say what remains bound to the gas, what vaporizes, what condenses, what doesn't. We do know it is highly radioactive. We know radon travels with the gas. We know that much. I mean, to quote a landowner in Texas who I met with a few years back, this is not your grandfather's gas. And I think that's what people don't realize. And, you know, what's happening in Porter Ranch is a great example. I mean, there's a continuous leaking methane situation there, and people are getting sick. But there are whenever there's a blowdown event in Minisink or an emergency shutdown event, we have the same experiences. We have children getting headaches. We have nosebleeds. We have all of that in Minisink as well. And I'm sure there are other communities along the pipeline who are experiencing the same thing. So this is why we say that this is precipitating both a public health as well as a climate change crisis. And it's not needed because, as James says, we do have the technology. We do have renewable energy solutions that are available right now. And I should point out, in response to that, on December 17th, of last year, when the governor announced the ban on fracking, that same day through LIPA, he rejected an offshore wind project off the coast of Long Island. And he did that citing cost. He said that it's going to cost too much money. It's a $1 billion project. Well, this is a $1 billion project as well. And it has a whole range of externalities associated with that we're going to pay with. When children get asthma and get sick, we as a community are going to be paying those costs.
I'm realizing that we have to get you down to the rally. There's two points that I just want to bring up real quick. One is geography here, which I find interesting because of the Hudson Valley. I believe you even call it a soup bowl. Mm-hmm. That helps with the problem of the gas being extracted. Correct.
Well, I mean, it's just one of the added, you know, impacts that are making this project all that more egregious. I mean, this is we have to remember, this is a pristine area. It is being built in a critical environmental area and a protected agricultural district. So it's where all of our local farms are. And on top of that, yeah, we have this soup bowl formation. And so the air doesn't dissipate the way it might otherwise dissipate. So we're going to have all of these toxic emissions just kind of hovering over that valley.
Because it is a valley.
It is a valley. And I have to point out that this plant is going to be sitting right on the edge of our famed Black Dirt region. It's a world famous mineral rich formation, you know, that took, you know, tens of thousands of years to create. We are destroying our natural resources. We are sacrificing our communities, and in the process, we are also eroding our democracy and our civil rights and our human rights.
You mentioned James a moment ago, and I made note of it because I wanted to ask you about it again. And that is the fact of the need. And one of the points that you bring up is that the power plants and the energy that is being produced in the Hudson Valley are running under 50%.
Correct.
So then the obvious question is, okay, if the corporations are coming in to make money, then how do they make money if they're only operating under 50%?
Well, right now they're not making money. What they need is a market. They need the pipelines to get their gas to market, and they need power plants as a justification and also as a consumer of their product. They are leveraged to a fairly well. They are in the soup because they don't have a market. They don't have the income coming back in. That's why they're trying to develop this out. That's why, and this happens because these large industries lobby at the level of the federal government and state governments and influence policy and influence decisions on what kind of technology we're going to go into to deal with the problem that we have of global warming. If you look on the larger scale, if you look at what was supposedly accomplished at COP21, it was that the planet was, the temperature was going to rise 3.7 degrees. As the representative from Bolivia said, that means at 3.7 degrees, we're on fire. Mm. Now, that's the best they came away with. They didn't come with, and anyway, it's all voluntary. And if you're going to take that seriously all over the world, and you realize that you're affecting not only the people here in Wayweyanda and the Hudson Valley, but people all over the world, you're going to have the ocean level rising, you understand that you have to right now keep it in the ground, absolutely, 100% in the ground. And you have to deal with whatever problems the transition presents to us as how we transition from non-renewables to a sustainable energy. This is all possible. It just takes commitment.
The climate summit in Paris and the agreement that came out of that,
yes.
I just use that as we end with you this morning, of we're looking at our global climate condition as a warming. So but it's individual things like this, like the plant that you're talking about, and through so many of the activists that are going to be on the steps of the Capitol in just a few moments, it's all of these issues that really come together that have to come together.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. We all live in the same climate. We are all going to be affected, and we all have to take responsibility. As we used to say in the movement, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Well, we will end there and remind folks, of course, that do you have a website?
Yes, it's protectorangecounty.org. And if you want to come and support us at court, our first next court appearance is January 21st at 5 p.m. at the Town of Wayweyanda Town Hall.
Okay. Right. And you won't get arrested today, right? You're not planning on it?
You never know.
You never know? All right. James Cromwell is an actor and activist, and it's a great pleasure to meet you and to have you on our program. Thank you very, very much for being with us. Pramila Malik, thank you so much for being with us again. ProtectOrangeCounty.org. Pramila, thank you so much
for having us.
Stay warm, and thank you very much for being with us. You're listening to the Round. It is indeed Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this.